1-1.
And a pleasant good afternoon to each and every one of you listening this afternoon. This is the 311 Radio Show, here with you every Sunday as we normally do it, bringing you as much information as we possibly can. I'm your host today. I know you haven't heard me for a while. I've missed you just as much. I am Natasha Ford, no longer Senior Fire and Prevention Officer, but Research Officer. And with me this afternoon, I have none other than Mr. Troy Wickham, Deputy Manager of the NCSA. And if persons hear NCSA, we're talking the National Council on Substance Abuse. Now, why would I want to have him here? Why is he here? Well, as you know, we're in the hype of crop over. Yes, music sounding good, parties. We had tipsy, we had powder, we had puffer collar. People about the place doing the things. As somebody said, we out of prison. And persons are partying, persons are, you know, consuming beverages. You know, I got a friend that would say, don't let Johnny Walker just walk away. But anyhow, Mr. Wickham is here this afternoon to enlighten us on how we can still have a social beverage, but do it in it responsibly. And for those of you who do not understand the work of the NCSA, I would now allow him to tell you something about the NCSA to give you a background into their history. Mr. Wickham, welcome to 311, our audience, our friends, our clients. They await you and welcome you.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Thank you for that warm welcome. Good afternoon to the listening public out there. It's a pleasure to be on the show representing the National Council on Substance Abuse. And as Natasha said, I will give a background on the National Council on Substance Abuse so you can get an idea of what we're doing here, why we were set up, and why we are here to serve the public. The National Council on Substance Abuse, the NCSA, we were established by Act of Parliament in 1995-13. We are a statutory corporation that is a statutory board. We fall under the aegis of the Ministry of Home Affairs, that is the then Ministry of Home Affairs, now the Ministry of Home Affairs and Information. Our oversight and policy is determined by a board of directors. That is our daily operations. We have a team of 19 committed persons. This is made up of the manager, myself. We have a program department, an admin department, and a comms department, as well as auxiliary staff. Let me say that the NCSA, we have various programs. Our programs and our initiatives, some things we are assisted by what we call volunteers, people who come on board to assist with our various programs. The mission is broken down to several categories. We address drug-related or substance-related issues affecting persons from infancy right up to adulthood. That means we are in the primary schools, we are in the secondary schools, we are in tertiary institutions, and we are across with the community. And these programs and these categories include what I call school-based prevention, community-based prevention, treatment and rehabilitation, and research and information, which is very important. And that's a general overview of what we do here.
Okay, so in other words, I need to have you back for another program because I know we can't cover all of those within this 30 minutes. So basically, you said you have so many programs you've started in the schools, primary, secondary, tertiaries, and such like. Question, do you think your message, especially if you're starting at the primary level, because persons don't seem to think at primary school, well, our children, you know, they're into this here or whatever the case is. Do you think that these programs starting so early has been effective? Have you seen any changes for the, well, how long have you been with the NCSA?
Personally, I've joined the NCSA in 2019. Before then, it was involved in law enforcement. So it was on working on the supply reduction side of the drug fight. I now join the demand reduction side. Basically, I have what I call a holistic view of the drug situation and what's going on the ground. Since joining the NCSA, I've been open to a lot of new opportunities. I see the fight against drugs from different eyes. I must say that I want persons in Barbados to understand that substance use and misuse is what I consider a mental health issue. and not just a criminal justice issue. We tend to think that once persons use or abuse substances, it's kind of taboo. They should be locked up or incarcerated in jail. And that in itself means an issue. These persons need help. They need to be rehabilitated and become productive citizens again across the island in Barbados.
So before we delve into that, let me pull you back just a little bit and why we wanted to do this program. Now, we know we are in the midst of our crop over season. As people say, we out of prison. For 2 years, persons have been locked up, as they put it, and we outside. So we know we can look for increase in the sales of alcoholic beverages. We've had a number of activities already. We've had the Puffer Caller, we've had the Tipsy, we have other activities coming up. We have the one everybody's probably looking forward to, and I'm not advertising them. I'm trying to remember some of them. 4 Day Morning, Picardy Crop.
Grand Kaduma.
Grand Kaduma, especially Grand Kaduma, the climax of it all. And we know if you don't see somebody with a cup in hand with something drinking, you're in the body. So how do we sensitize? I know we cannot tell persons do not drink. We can't tell persons don't drink. So how do we sensitize persons now and let them know what is the adequate amount that they should be drinking, or when they feel a certain, what are the signs to look for to know, well, at this point in time, you've had enough. I know for me, my sign is that I start scanning my mouth. My friends know that. So after just smelling the cork and I scan my mouth, yeah, that's enough.
You get giggly.
Exactly.
Let me say that the NCSA has basically year long, we actually conduct programs to make persons aware of the harms and dangers and signs and symptoms associated with alcohol consumption and the use and misuse of alcohol. Let me say, we at the NCSA recognize that at certain times of the year, crop over being one, cricket tours being another one, and of course, the festive season, which is the Christmas season, and persons tend to consume lots of alcohol. And that in itself is culturally. And we try to ramp up our drug education programs, especially around this period. And we had already started this way back in June of this year, where we had a radio show entitled Know Your Limits. We had the opportunity to partner with Mungay Distilleries, as well as the West Indian Rum and Spirits Producers Association, WISPA. We had the opportunity to share information on various radio stations, including 92.9 FM, Slam FM, 95.3 and 98.1, where we shared information on how persons should be what I call hydrated. When using alcohol, how signs and symptoms to look up for, how persons that the rum producer have a responsibility to play in the park. They have to let persons know in terms of their labeling, their signage, their promotional events, their partnerships. Also, that artists have a role.
Thank you.
All artists have a role too to play in this whole process, where they must be mindful of the lyrics they use in some of their songs, and they must understand that they influence the younger minds, the younger person in the community, and that in itself can be harmful to them.
So many impressionable minds listening to them during this time. And I mean, if you listen to some of our younger children, I think they can recite these songs to some of these lyrics better than they can say the ABC. And
agreed.
If you have that type of power within your hands, I think at the end of the day, we really need to be conscious of what we put out there. There are some persons, I mean, sometimes I pass blocks. And when you pass the blocks, it's like nobody's there. You see everybody probably the nighttime. And by the time you pass the morning, you see the badges, because I call them badges of honor nowadays, when they can pass and they can see about 13 bottles lying off on the sidewalk, or you see them on a table or something like that. And the thing is, for me, it is frightening. And why is it so frightening is because at the end of the day, these young people, they're driving vehicles. You're seeing them on the motorcycles. And then when I did a comparison of our statistics last year, we would have had for the same period up to the 22nd of this month, we would have had, don't me misquote, we would have had 30 motor vehicular accidents for that period last year. For this same period this year, we've had 45, which means that there's a 34% increase. And at the end of the day, when we respond, and that is not just to say, understand, when the fire service responds to fires, we respond to the more serious, accidents. We respond to the more serious accidents. These are the ones where persons are probably trapped in the vehicle and we need to use the jaws of life to, what people call the jaws of life, to extricate them. How do we get through to our young people? What are you doing? I know you said you're in the primary school. What is your response from primary school children? What is your response from secondary? What is the response from the tertiary? Are they like, now you're talking bare nonsense, drink a drink and chill with the rest or get a vibe? Some, I don't know, I'm asking.
Well, let me say that first, Nico, step back. We try to use what we call here an evidence-based approach to our interventions. Evidence-based approach to our interventions. And we conducted a primary school survey in 2020. Mm-hmm. And alcohol, marijuana, and tobacco showed for us is the most prevalent drugs amongst that population. That survey was done between person between 9 and 11 years old.
Wait. Yes. Repeat that again. Are 9 to 11 year olds are using these things?
They admitted, some of them admitted, yes, that actually tried it or they was given it at some stage in their life. Let me say that that in itself, during that same survey, they actually said that the places they actually received these substances were the main places, the family, siblings, which includes siblings, parents, cousins, and the place is the home. Yes, I know it's a little scary. And we are concerned here on the National Council on Substance Abuse. It's important for us to get the message across to the parents as well as the students. And we use various approaches to sharing information. We tend to use social media. We have software tool called Nearpod. And it's a very interactive tool where we actually have activities, the complete presentations. We sometimes use songs, poetry, etc., to get the information to these students. I can say it's going well so far. We are actually hoping to conduct a secondary school survey that will also focus on prevalence, that is the use, the use of substances amongst that particular population as in the secondary school. And it's important, again, that we keep reinforcing the message. I'm using various methods. Sometimes we actually go to the schools to have one-on-one sessions. Our counseling department is available as well. So it's a holistic approach we're using. And it's important for me, being the person in charge of programming here at the council, to inform the public as much as possible using various media, traditional media, especially social media. We know the younger generation like Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and Snapchat and stuff like that. So we actually use those platforms as well to have some competitions to get the students involved and to get the message across. I can tell you now, I can let the listening public know what we consider a standard drink. And a standard drink of alcohol contains roughly about 14 grams of pure alcohol. And I will break it down in simple terms. Well,
please.
Simple terms. A regular 12-ounce beer that actually contains 5% of alcohol, that is considered a standard drink. A 5-ounce glass of wine that contains 12% of alcohol, that is a standard drink. And a 1.5-ounce of distilled spirits, which contains 40% alcohol, and that is a standard drink. That is what we call a small amount of drink. I know a person out there having fun and engaging, parallel jonesing. We tend to, as you say, our badge of honor, we like persons that they put on their social media, how much bottle of spirits they drink, how many beers they drink. And that in itself can be constituted as binge drinking. And I may say I will let the public know what is binge drinking medically. And binge drinking is what we will call 4 drinks for a female and 5 drinks for a male in a 2-hour period. And that in itself will put you way over the limit.
So that's binge drinking. And this is 4 regular beers we're talking about.
Exactly, in 2 hours.
In two hours. And five for the meal. And it has nothing to do with body structure, size, or anything like that. Persons will say, you can't hold your liquor because you're built for it. You know, you ain't got enough. Or people look at it, well, you're small, so you can get drunk quicker. And some people, my tolerance level higher than yours, I've been able to hold a little bit more than you. As I say, for me, I just got a smelly car. That's my limit.
It's important to note, yes, weight, sex, age, metabolism play a role in a person's intoxication level or in judgment. We know that substances that alter the mind impair your judgment.
Yes.
We at the NCSA will tell persons, if you intend to go, have fun, socialize with your friends at the various events over the period, the crossover period, don't get behind the wheel of a vehicle. Don't take charge of any vehicle. You become what we call a threat to society. It become what we call problematic substance use, where your substance use become a threat to the general public, the society. Your substance use become problematic. And again, I will go back to our research, our recently disseminated Barden Report, 2020 Barden Report, indicate again, alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana are the substances reported for problematic use amongst the general population. And that's persons, I can say again, from as early as 14, 13 years old, right to 65 years old. And it's a cause of concern. Persons must understand, if you intend to go out, have fun, have a drink, have a designated driver, don't get behind the steering wheel. We advocate, again, we try to tell persons, don't drink and drive, not to consume substances. However, if you have to consume substances, walk with either taxi fare or have a designated driver. Is important.
But knowing the mindset of a lot of persons out there, why am I going to pay a taxi fare? That's my car, boss. You can't tell me not to drive it. You can't tell me don't get in it. And you see, at the end of the day, we don't recognize that, as you said, we become a hazard to society. We don't think about the other people that we're going to impact. And again, I'm saying, when you look at the increase in the amount of motor vehicular accidents, I know in some cases that alcohol had to do with this. Now, we've been having a fight in our hands. Persons have been asking the question, and I mean, there has been appeal after appeal. We heard earlier this year, breathalyzer again be enforced. We come in with it, and I'm sure some people had the pom-poms and celebrating. Yes, it's finally here. What is going on with that? Why is it, in order to protect our people from these others who don't seem to care, have this little regard for life, is it so, the process seems a little so slow or a little sluggish in coming to the forefront? How are you guys attacking this? I mean, as being the deputy manager, I should see you out there so championing and fighting, but you know, I'm not guessing, get it here.
Well, I can say that legislation actually passed. The last report I saw in the media is that the police say they are ready and they're waiting to actually enforce the law. Mm-hmm. However, there is a message being afoot, basically for us or for the various stakeholders as relates to this particular piece of legislation to educate the public. It's important, education. They say knowledge is power. A person must be aware that as it relates to alcohol consumption, person must be aware that there is a legal limit or what we call a limit that persons must understand, and the prescribed limit is 35 micrograms of 100 milliliters of alcohol of breath. So when you blow into the breath analyzer piece of equipment, and you're found to be over that limit, as a first-time offender, you will be fined $5,000 or 2 years imprisonment, or both.
First-time offender. And you're drinking cough syrup, man.
And for a second-time offender, you'll be fined $10,000 or 5 years in prison, or both.
So I think the penalties sound good. I think the penalties sound good, because at the end of the day, these are other people's lives. I mean, it's okay for you to wake up dead when you get in an accident. But then the persons behind now who you've left traumatized, if it's somebody else you went in, you know what? If it's just you, you're one that you're taking along. Again, I can't even say that, because you leave your family behind. Family now has to mourn you. If you were someone productive in society, it means we've lost. And I'm not saying that persons don't have their habits or their means of distressing, but it's when these methods overcome you and become problematic, then that is another issue that we have to deal with. Now, you said something earlier that we don't approach alcohol drinking or alcoholism as a mental health issue. We just seem to think that these people are nuisance to society. In some cases, some people even glorify it. Help me to understand or educate our persons out there. If you're saying this is a mental health issue, then how do we approach these people? How do we deal with these people? And I'm asking this question because I'm one of the ones, and I'm going to be honest with you, who see some of these people, I don't understand it's a mental health. I'm like, you're just wasting money as far as I'm concerned. You're just flushing money down the drain. There's so many people out there who don't have, but I can't tell a man what to do with his money. So how do we as a society become more tolerant in understanding this mental health issue? What do we do? How do we take steps towards this?
Okay, fine, thanks. I think that's a very important question, a nice question. First, let me say call a paradigm shift in our mentality. We see substance abuse as a taboo subject. No one wants to actually discuss substance abuse. And addiction in itself is a disease, and there's what I call it has a long road to recovery. Persons fall off the wagon often. They start the process, they fall off the wagon. They have to come back on the wagons. And that in itself is the long road to recovery. We must understand that. We must understand these persons are suffering from a disease, addiction, the disease of addiction. So then that's the first thing we must understand is the disease. And this person need help. And professional help in terms of one, it calls for a holistic approach. One, we must understand the social aspect of it, the environmental aspect of it, and they need as much support as possible. It would involve social workers, counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, and the family, the immediate family. They have a role to play in the whole healing process, as well as when you look at the enablers or the triggers for persons engaging in substance abuse or substance misuse. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to identify these areas, seek help. We at the NCSA, we offer counseling. I know that the psychiatric hospital, again, that's another taboo subject, because no one wants to go to the psychiatric hospital for treatment. Because from the time you go at the psychiatrist, you're deemed as what? A madman.
A madman, correct.
A madman. And
there's that a stigma attached, a very negative stigma attached to it.
And again, that stigma aligns itself with substance use and misuse. People see those persons as paros in Belgian parlance and nuisances to society. But we want those persons to be reintegrated into society and become productive. We are losing too many of our productive persons between the most productive years to substance abuse and substance misuse. And it's important that we look at this thing holistically. We get all the major players involved to combat this problem.
Which leads me to answer this question. Does Does alcoholism have a face? And why I'm asking this question is because the amount of time that people seem to think that just paros or persons who walk the street or look a certain way, that does it have a face?
I love that question. We associate substance use or substance misuse with an image. And we have persons who, what I call functional addicts, moving around our society. And in, on the street, they call them private dancers. We have persons, they're private dancers. Abuse substances in private, at home, in their small circles, and then they go to work and appear to be functioning as normal. And persons only relate is a problem and things really go awry. We're really getting some vehicle accident, they lash out at work, but I'm sure in almost every office across Barbados, there's somebody in that office privately abusing or misusing some substances. Some persons can work under the influence of various substances, or we tend to use whenever there's downtime, we tend to resort to substance use, whether it be alcohol, whether it be marijuana, whether it be tobacco, and that in itself is a cause for concern. Substance abusers do not have a face. They may not pellucidly clear. We can't look at someone and say, well, look, he or she is an addict. It's important for us to pay attention to what I would call signs. And these signs include, especially for alcohol, anxiety, blackouts. Alcohol is seen as what I call a depressant. So persons slow down, they slow down in metabolism. Persons have their drowsy, there's forgetfulness, there's fatigue. Then there's the hangover, what we call a hangover, this headache, there's lower inhibition. Persons become risky, do things they don't normally do. There's slurred speech, there's stammering. And sometimes some persons, violent, aggressive. You may know someone from time to drink, you say, when this body drink, it's here this often. Boy, turn into a monster. You become a very passive person. Then they don't have any, when they're not using. But the minute they start using the substance, they turn, it's like Jack and Hyde.
they
get very aggressive.
Some of the signs and symptoms that you just mentioned, if anyone knows anything medical, some of these could be confused with some person who is diabetic. So I think we need to be careful because sometimes we see a man, as you said, aggressive, low blood sugar, being aggressive, tired, having anxiety. You just described half of their symptoms and they thought it was me, but I know you don't drink. They were describing me. They're going to get really aggressive. without a drink. So how do we, in all honesty, separate them? How do I know when it's a medical emergency versus alcoholism? Oh my God, I didn't pronounce.
For me, obviously, it's something that should be monitored over a period of time. Obviously, it should have what I call some kind of medical background in terms of the person's medical background. Observation is always good. You can smell when a person uses substances, have a smell.
Thank you. I wanted that to be the key thing, dear. Use your senses.
Exactly. You smell.
You can't mistake the smell of alcohol.
Exactly. And my thing is, when you observe, you have a colleague that come work under the influence and report it to someone. You're helping that person. I always like to say, you see something, you say something. Do not let that person continue to come to work and continue to be under the influence of substances. Operating what you call a functional user is important. And let me backtrack a little bit because it just crossed my mind. I'm sure that moving around in your private capacity, you may see person what we call mixing drink, and I know especially younger demographic like to drink their spirits with what we call energy drinks.
Yes.
Energy drinks, like the energy drinks, and they use what we call a spirit, which is a depressant with a stimulant, and drink is a stimulant, and it tends to mask the fact that you're only the influence. Because you're intoxicated, but you, the stimulant got you all hyped up and you're bubbly and ready to go, and you get your vehicle, you hit the road, and then boom. Or then you're going to have what I call unprotected sex, that and then tomorrow you don't know. So there's risks and dangers associated with it. It's important, again, for us here at the NCSA to spread the message. We remain committed to giving persons the facts, letting them make the choice. And to provide education.
Now, Mr. Wickham, Troy, as I said to you earlier, this program is not going to be long enough for us to get in all the information that we want to. And unfortunately, we've come to the end of it. So I put you up on spot right now. I want you back next week. Or week after.
I'm prepared to come to give as much information as possible. All right. Thank you good. For having us. Thank you.
No problem. As you said, education, keeping people aware of what's happening out there, that is what we are also all about. Once we can educate and we can see a reduction, it means less work for us at the Barbados Fire Service. In that capacity, we can focus on other things. So,
in the business of saving lives.
Definitely. Thank you so very much for being our guest today. This has been the 311 Radio Show with your guest, Mr. Troy Wickham. Troy, I just made it confused for one other man. My apology.
No problem. You won't be a good guy.
As usual, we like to say, fire prevention is our intention, and accident prevention is also our intention. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Thank you.
On the Barbados Fire Service 311.